So what did we discuss yesterday? So long ago, it's hard to remember, right? Yeah.
One point we were discussing that we should not be disappear in the process of devotion.
We should not do what in the process?
Dissipate.
Deceptive. Be deceptive. Okay. Okay. Let's. I'll try to start this off the following way. We. The overall thing. We get into details after. The broad picture was. We heard the description of Lord Brahma. So Shukadeva Goswami is narrating the Maharaj Parikshit, and he was describing Lord Brahma's non-deceptive penance in Bhakti Yoga, and the result of that, so over some extended time, was that he saw the Supreme Lord face to face, which is being stated here as the object or goal of the purified conditioned soul. See, he attained that, and then Maharaj Parikshit starts to describe the detail how that happened. Okay, so one point that we discussed was in the execution of devotional service, the execution of the duties of life, it should be non-deceptive. We discussed two different ways to contemplate or to understand what non-deceptive penance means. What's one of those two ways? You always have seen someone else. Mataji's, no?
Maharaj, it is fundamental that conceptions are clear. In non-deceptive devotion service, it is fundamental constitution and conceptions are clear.
Good.
And the second one was, there is no other purpose other than achieving the relationship with Lord Krishna. Other purposes like becoming more peaceful, making more wealth, these purposes are not there.
Mm.
The purpose is to develop one's relationship with Lord Krishna.
Okay. Very good. There was a particular point that Prabhupada was making in the purport as well about other processes besides the bhakti process. What was that point? Who can recall what that point was? Yes, Pankaj?
Other processes do not uproot the, completely remove the simple tendencies from the heart, but the bhakti process does.
Yeah. And they back to the first point that you made, they don't work with the full spiritual conception, or they continue to operate with the wrong conception. And therefore, they don't purify the soul or free the soul from ill tendencies. And those ill tendencies are deceptive. One of those ill tendencies is to see some process as a means of increasing mine, and another is increasing the wrong conception of I. Particularly, I am supreme, and so forth. Therefore, fundamentally they're deceptive, as opposed to the bhakti process, which is fundamentally or inherently non-deceptive. But then the answers that you gave to fulfill that, you have to have the right conception, and we also have to have the right purpose in executing bhakti. So it's non-deceptive. good. Any other main points that we discussed, or points that stick out prominent in your mind?
Question of the session I described about chanting. You have said that good chanting will lead to good hearing, good relationship.
It's the root of everything good. And the converse is also there. If we're careless or mechanical or slack, inattentive, it's the root of a lot of other problems. Okay?
You gave the example of Gargi Muni in relation to deceptive penances, that he performed penances with some ulterior motive to, although he was performing penances, but his motive was to get a...
It wasn't Garga Muni, it was Gargi, the son of Garga Muni. Who is the disciple of Bharadvaj Muni. Okay. We've covered everything? Anything additional?
One point was how Lord Brahma, he was very inquisitive, and when he got his answer, then he was like, he took it very seriously and applied himself for 1,000 financial years.
Good. We're going to discuss that a little bit again. I'm going to go into some more detail about that this morning. Same point. Does anybody remember the subject that we discussed, that one who becomes the knower of Krishna becomes the knower of all things? Remember that one? What was that point? What was said in the verse, or what did we discuss in the class? It connects to the non-deceptive in both categories, having the right concept and having very focused motivation, a pure motivation. One who becomes the knower of Krishna becomes the knower of all things. I explained, it doesn't mean that you know trivia, but it means that you know essential things, because those essential things are connected to Krishna. They're disclosed to the non-deceptive devotee, like things were disclosed to Brahma. And one of the things that was disclosed to Brahma was how we could render his service, because he was endowed with the impetus to create, but it was not clear to him how to do it. But he had to do it. The urge was very, very commanding, impelling, but he didn't know how to do it. So how to? We also meet those circumstances, and we're not sure how to do. So we can look to a material source of information, how to do, or we can look to Krishna. That's what Brahma did. What are some of the other things that became known to Brahma because of his non-deceptive penance that we spoke about? I'm going to speak some more about it today too. Just the besides the material world, the spiritual world, that which is beyond the senses even of Brahma to detect, what to speak of ours, he came to know about that. He was asking. Excuse me. Maharaj Parikshit is asking Shukadeva Goswami to give the answer. Shukadeva Goswami tells about how Brahma understood those things, and he's disclosing those things. And so that's knowledge in disciplic succession, which is different than Lord Brahma directly experiencing it by Shukadeva Goswami explaining it to Maharaj Pariksit, but in another sense, it's non-different. Shukadeva Goswami's, I'll say it again, Shukadeva Goswami's narration of what Brahma experienced and what Brahma experienced, they're non-different. Say it again, a different way. We could experience the spiritual world by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam if we had the same kind of faith in the hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam that Brahma had in hearing the instructions that he received. Same opportunity is there, only we don't have to undergo 1,000 celestial years. This Srimad Bhagavatam is compiled for people in Kali Yuga that don't live such duration of life. One celestial year is 6 times 12 times 30 times 1,000 of our years. And then 1,000 of those. We don't live for such duration of time. But we can hear, if we have the same qualities that Brahma had, that faith, sincerity, earnestness, we're going to hear some more about it. What else did Brahma... What else was disclosed to Brahma by his non-deceptive penance? The source of his existence? He wanted the answer to that one. We may never even ask that question, but we can receive the answer to that question. What else? He came to understand his spiritual identity. He was covered with a material body, but he came to realize his own spiritual identity. So by knowing Krishna, he became the knower of so many very vital things. He received that through this descending mercy process. And that's the same for us also. So we may not be born on a lotus stem and search out where the stem... Our procedures of life exploration are going to be a little different than Brahma's, but the principles are the same. So... he's in the water tracing out the stem, the source of the stem, can't find it. He hears two syllables repeated twice, tapa, tapa. Within his heart he receives the 16 syllable Gayatri mantra. And what does he think about all of that? What are specific? It's important. How does he receive those two things? Instruction, tapa, tapa, and the Gayatri mantra. Yeah.
Yes, tapa, but the Gayatri mantra is revealed within his heart.
Yeah. So when the Gayatri mantra is revealed in his heart, and he hears the instruction, tapa, tapa. How does he process that? What happens? What does he do? He goes to his computer and enters the 16 syllable mantra in his computer so he doesn't forget it, right? No, that isn't what he does. What does he do? But why does he do that?
He he was looking for a solution to his quest he was doing. And he, when he receives this, he understands that this is the solution that has been given to him. So he takes it with great earnestness and he carries it out for one problem.
Yeah. There's so it thank you. In the so starting with text 8, it describes Brahma does three things, and Prabhupada, this is the theme through this three or four. This is the theme for this morning. Three things. I'll read the sentence. He received the transcendental sound from the right source. He accepted it as a reality, and he prosecuted the direction without hesitation. So we'll repeat those three things. He received the transcendental sound from the right source. Now, very appropriately, Akshay mentioned he was eager to receive answers to some very important questions. He couldn't go to the library, couldn't go to the university, he couldn't go to any other person because there wasn't any other person, but he very, very strongly wanted answers to some questions. Who am I? What is my source of existence? How am I to fulfill my duties in life? What is the Supreme? What is my relationship with the Supreme? What is my eternal identity? And then he received from the right source its transcendental sound. And the second thing is he accepted it. Prabhupada makes, for three verses in a row, I noted, actually I circled in pencil, how many times he used the word accept or accepted. It's about 10 times. Because acceptance precedes the next thing, which is what we were talking about yesterday morning, which is applying. Or he uses prosecuting or executing what he heard. He accepted it. And so he describes that process of acceptance. What we're hearing in this morning is the answer to this perpetual question that gets asked every time, at least three or four times when I visit. How do we become better at applying instructions? Listen carefully. It's right here. So, at one point from yesterday, and then I'll continue. One other review point is this, as Brahma did, we should do. So as Brahma did, he heard and what he heard was a particular instruction that is tapa, and as Pankaj indicated, he was to do this in a non-deceptive manner, which means that he didn't have the facility that we have of asking lots of questions about the Supreme from a spiritual master or a scripture or anything like that. But his motive was to achieve that understanding and that relationship, becoming situated in that relationship with his source of existence. And so he discharged that in devotion. In devotion means, Prabhupada explains now in And so we should do the same. We shouldn't expect that spiritual life is something casual, something easygoing, take a little bit, leave it a little bit. It's a very sustained effort is required to have it become effective. And so when he heard the sound, he accepted, this must be the Supreme Lord. And he did that with great faith, because he couldn't see who the person was. But he accepted that with faith. And he accepted that it was, this is very important, that the instruction, as the Lord is absolute, his instruction is also absolute. This will connect me to the Lord because the instruction is absolute. And executing the instruction is absolute. Otherwise, there's no meaning to do it. It doesn't bring you to God if it's not of an absolute. And if it is of an absolute nature, then accept it as such. This word, accept. He accepted it as an absolute instruction from an absolute person to be executed in an absolutely attentive way, knowing that it's absolute. That much he knew, as far as the conception, having the right conception. It was absolute. The mantra is absolute. The instruction to perform it, absolute. So I'm going to repeat some of the absolute, so the acceptance statements that are using the word. The best way to understand, oh, I'll read the whole thing. Brahma's acceptance of the sound was due to his pure vision of the absolute nature of the Lord. And due to his correct vision, he made no distinction between the Lord and the Lord's instruction. There is no difference between the Lord and the sound vibration coming from him, even though he is not personally present. The best way of understanding is to accept such divine instruction, and Brahma, the prime spiritual master of everyone, is the living example of this process of receiving transcendental knowledge. The potency of transcendental sound is never minimized because the vibrator is apparently absent. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, or any revealed scripture in the world is never to be accepted as ordinary mundane sound without transcendental potency. That's what to do and what not to do. And he says it again. One has to receive the transcendental sound from the right source, accept it as a reality, and prosecute the direction without hesitation. So that's the third one is, so receive it, accept it, prosecute it. Without hesitation, this is like this other terminology, in earnestness. I looked the word up in the dictionary. Sincerity is a synonym. And there are other things that, another thing that in earnestness means is without being deviated. Something like vyavasayatmika buddhi. Nothing is going to, if something comes to take my attention away, won't take my attention away. The discipline of the mind, because the intelligence is so strong, as in Brahma's case, so strong, nothing is going to distract me. And this is, Brahma's case is before creation, ours is during manifestation. There's lots of duality. And this in earnestness means, or without hesitation means, or with sincerity means, no distraction. Sahotra Swami, one of our sannyasis, gave a class once where it was in Vrindavan, actually, and I recall it very clearly. He gave a dictionary definition of sincerity. He says it comes from the Latin word, I forget, scire, I think it is, which refers to a kind of marble that doesn't have any lines in it. So it's marble that's just, it's all one color. Like in making deities, it's important to have not lines in the marble. So all white or all black. Skire. So from that is sincere. No, it's one thing. That's sincere. One thing. Vyavasayatmika buddhi. I know this, or non-deceptive penance in bhakti yoga. Nothing is going to interfere, interrupt, dissuade, distract. Things will come my way that will attempt to do that. But undeviatingly. And over a period of time. Sustained over a period of time. Not for 5 minutes. Or chant attentively for a few mantras, but each morning, and each morning, and making a very diligent effort like that. So, then Prabhupada discusses about the execution part. He writes, the disciple, well, first is recognizing, is the instruction coming from the right source? And then recognizing it is coming from the right source, accepting it, this is Krishna. This is absolute. And then, he says, actually it's a requirement before the hearing, and that is being prepared to execute. Tadvidi pranipatina pariprashnena sevaya. If one goes to a person to inquire about spiritual matters, you should be careful that the person is bona fide. But if you accept the person is bona fide, you should be prepared to execute what they say, not filter it out, I like this part, I don't like that part, or I'll think about it, or I'll do some of it. That's not the way of spiritual attainment. One must be ready to execute the order of the bona fide spiritual master, as Lord Brahma executed the instruction of the spiritual master, the Lord himself. Then Prabhupada explains again, following the order of the bona fide spiritual master is the only duty of the disciple. And this completely faithful execution of the order of the bona fide spiritual master is the secret of success. Then the next paragraph is about controlling the senses. So what I understand the instruction, I accept the instruction, I will fulfill the instruction. Whoops. Is describing the sense control. Brahma, I'll read the paragraph. Brahma controlled his two grades of senses. What are the two grades? Working and knowledge acquiring. Two grades of senses. By means of sense perception and sense organs, because he had to engage said senses in the execution of the order of the Lord. So we have these two faculties. Understanding and executing. Acquiring knowledge, acting on that knowledge. Both have to be in order. Therefore, controlling the senses means engaging in the service of the Lord. The Lord's orders descend in disciplic succession to the bona fide spiritual master, and thus execution of the order of the bona fide spiritual master is factual control of the senses. Such execution of penance in full faith and sincerity those are criteria that help us get our act together. Faith and sincerity, non-deceptive penance, in earnestness, without hesitation. Those are all qualifiers of executing properly. And when we do like that, then all these corollary things, besides encountering or reawakening our relationship with Krishna, all other things also come. So Prabhupada says, Brahmaji became so powerful that he became the creator of the universe. Of course, that was his mandate, and ours is something else. But to become all that we can be, this is the formula for doing that. He was able to attain such power by that process. You can look up the text later. It's text 8 in chapter 9. Very nice. And it's such a nice message. It continues the next verse in purport with some embellishments. Same message, but further embellished. Here's the translation for text 9, chapter 9. Personality of Godhead. So that's what Brahma did. Now here's what the Lord did. And this is one of the nicest, I say this every time when I come across something like this, but what does the Lord feel when he sees the devotee do like this? The Lord is a loving person, and when he sees such an effort, he's a loving person. What does he do? What does he feel? Here's this verse is saying. Personality of Godhead, being thus very much satisfied with the penance of Lord Brahma, was pleased to manifest his personal abode, Vaikuntha, the supreme planet above all others. This transcendental abode of the Lord is adored by all self-realized persons, free from all kinds of miseries and fear of illusory existence. That's some reciprocation. He not only showed himself, but there's Brahma seated in complete darkness, because there's no sun, there's no lamps, there's no electricity, and there's no matches or lighters or nothing. Darkness. And he's just sitting there, the absolute darkness, for 1,000 celestial years doing this 16-syllable mantra. So the Lord was very pleased, and he displayed the entire Vaikuntha world right before him. Of course, he showed his own form, but he showed the fullness of the spiritual world, and we're going to hear that description. So we can hear the description, and this is how Prabhupada enters into the purport, as something material, if we're carrying material conceptions, or something mythical, if we're carrying a speculative conception, but it shouldn't be accepted that way. But unfortunately, it would be accepted that way if one doesn't have these other criterion, faith, sincerity, have purified oneself to some degree by non-deceptive penance and so forth. So he spends a fair amount of time describing the non-mythical and non-material nature of the spiritual world. In the verse, the word is there, Sva Drishta Vabihi, and that is that Brahma was realizing not only this Vaikuntha region, but simultaneously he was realizing his own spiritual identity, because you don't get one without the other, or the other without the one. They're simultaneous. And then because it's one of the questions, what about the body of Brahma in comparison to the body of the Lord, because the body of Brahma came from the body of the Lord and the body of the Lord is spiritual, so is not the body of Brahma also spiritual? And so the answer is given very nicely in the purport. It's expanded from the verse. But so we talked about this, I guess it was yesterday also. Brahma's body is born, stays for some time, and dies. Whereas the form of Lord Vishnu is eternal, is sometimes manifest and sometimes withdrawn. Apparently not manifest, at least to our vision. But its appearance is different than Brahma's body's being born. But then there is a unique position of Brahma because of his non-deceptive penance in bhakti yoga, and that is his body became spiritualized, which is a third category between spiritual and material. It acts in a spiritual way, but although it is born, stays for some time, and it disappears. So Prabhupada writes, the personality of Godhead and the personalities of devotees of the Lord are all transcendental, thus they do not have material bodies. But the body may perish, of a pure devotee may perish, but it doesn't act in a material way. It acts in a spiritual way because it's free from, then he lists the five sufferings or five, actually in Mindurya Kandambani it's one of the lists of anartas or the imperfections of material forms. We discussed them yesterday evening. Can anybody remember what they are? Sanskrit or English? Avidya, Asmita, that list. Go ahead.
Avidya, Asmita.
Abhinivesh, Raga, and Dvesha. So, let's see if we can recall what they are. Avidya.
Ignorance.
Asmita. Anyone?
Unsteadiness of mind.
Asmita means false conception. It's like false ego, acting through false ego. Abhinivesh. Yeah?
Repeated tendency for self-gratification.
Yeah. A pervasive tendency. And raga, attachment, dvesha, repulsion. So, I want to entertain you for a moment. It'll take a while for the computer to boot. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his songs, as the Sharanagati is a series of songs, Kalpataru is another series of songs, and he discusses, I'll describe it first while the computer's booting. He discusses exactly the same subject that we're covering here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 9, in a song form. Exactly. Even including the I and mine and these five contaminations or unwanted features of material existence. So, how Prabhupada concludes this little section is he's saying that the body of the Lord is free from these miseries, and by contact with the Lord, the body of the devotee or the actions of a devotee are free from these imperfections also. And he's bringing this up specifically to counter the impersonal view that what's going to be described next, we're going to hear some details of the Vaikuntha world that the Lord manifests before Brahma, and it's not mythical, and it's not material, and it's not imaginative, but it's experienced by Brahma. He knows that it's real, and one who has these contaminations thinks otherwise. And that's their misfortune. The impersonal conception of oneself is just the negative, the negation of material personality, and is far from the positive experience of personal form. The personal forms of the transcendental abode will be explained in the following verses. Brahmaji also describes the highest planets in the Vaikuntha as Goloka Vrindavan, where the Lord resides as a cowherd boy, keeping transcendental Surabhi cows and surrounded by hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune. So the verse Chintamani Prakara Sarvasu is quoted. So Prabhupada is very concerned that his reader will understand these things correctly. So for our purposes, to get to that realization, so it's not just some interesting information, but something that the hearing process carries us at least some steps towards that realization. We have to have non-deceptive penance. We have to have the right conceptions and the right motivation. So when we hear these things, we hear them with faith and in remembering them and in thinking of them, it can act to eradicate the material situation altogether. So Kalyana Kalpataru, song number 5. Here's the translation. O my heart, I see 5 endless sufferings: avidya, asmita, abhinivesh, durvara, rag, and dvesh. Now he explains them. Avidya comes from forgetting the Supreme Lord. Asmita comes from directing one's thoughts away from the Supreme Lord. Abhinivesh comes from rapt meditation on things other than the Supreme Lord. Rag, durvara, or irresistible attachment, comes from blind love for things other than the Supreme Lord. And dvesha comes from the struggle to purify the soul. These 5 sufferings always torment me. It's interesting. He's telling us where they come from or what they're rooted in. Next, in this song 5. Forgetting the world of Vaikuntha, I became mad for Maya's pleasures. With I surrounded myself. Again and again I thought, this is mine, and that is mine also. Oh, my brothers, in this way, my heart was filled with anxieties. I searched for the way to cure this disease. Alas, alas, I met a physician who is like death personified. He said, I am the Supreme Brahman. Maya is to be unaware of that truth. Now I see that his medicine brought me unbearable pain. He met a Mayavadi who said, you just have to realize that you're Brahman. You're Supreme Brahman, and everything's fine. On the one side, the disease of materialism. On the other side, the demon physician of impersonalism, a physician like death personified. How will I escape my troubles? If I take shelter of the merciful Lord Chaitanya, I will easily cross over these horrible calamities. So in simple Bengali songs, Prabhupada is giving the same that we're getting through these purports in the Bhagavatam. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a genius. And very productive. He wrote so many books. He spent hours and hours and hours compiling, composing, and just anyway, he was empowered. An empowered genius. So one more verse that's preparing us for the vision that Brahma saw. In that, this is text 10, in that personal abode of the Lord, the material modes of ignorance and passion do not prevail, nor is there any of their influence of ignorance. Excuse me. Nor is there any of their influence in goodness. So in other words, it's Shuddha Sattva, that's what he's saying. And there's no time. This was already stated. Where did we hear this about the absence of time and the influence of material existence? What was that?
One was undergone the process of hearing is not under the influence of time. Or the
who said it? Well, give the context a little bit.
Maharaj Parikshit was saying in previous chapter that he was verifying the process of hearing. The example of autumn rain was given, and he was saying, was attentively heard, sincerely heard, won't come under the process of time, or any tribulation won't matter to him. Okay. Modes of nature won't take on that person.
Yeah. When it was heard properly, comes to know themselves and is no longer influenced by these material circumstances of time and material nature and modes of nature. So that was two chapters ago. No, that was chapter 8. That was the questions spoken by Maharaj Parikshit. So now the abode of the Lord is of a similar nature. Time and the modes are absent. Everything that is there exists eternally, without discrimination. Both the demigods and demons worship the Lord as devotees. So in the purport, I was going to read this, but it would take a while. It's very, very wonderful argument, or a rational sequence, where Prabhupada is explaining why we should accept the Bhagavatam as it is. So essentially the language is practically like poetry, but I'll just summarize it because of time. He says that the materialist can't count the leaves on a tree, or all the leaves on all trees, and the hairs on their body, and yet they want to say whether there's something in the spiritual world that has qualities like this or not. Even things within their experience, they can't know properly what to speak of things beyond their experience. But they would rather say that it doesn't exist. It's imaginative. It's mythical. Or they may say, as the impersonalists do, it exists, but it's material. And really what's real is beyond that, the impersonal. Both are born of speculation. They're not born of faith. They're not born of hearing. They're born of deception. Then he takes a little jab at their spacecraft. Man may discover so many wonderful vehicles of journey, but even if he reaches the moon by his much advertised spacecraft, he cannot remain there. The sane man, therefore, without being puffed up as if he were the god of the universe, abides by the instructions of the Vedic literature, the easiest way to acquire knowledge in transcendence. So he's setting before us these different choices. And we should know that we should wake up and recognize that we have a choice to make. We can choose materialism, we can choose impersonalism, or we can choose devotion. And there are consequences for each one, and there's outcomes for each one. So if we want knowledge, so let us know through the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam of the nature and constitution of the transcendental world beyond the material sky, from persons that have this acumen of non-deceptive penance and the mercy of the Lord coming into their life. And then we can know about those things that are beyond our capacity to, with our senses, to see and to know. Anyways, nice argument. And he goes through then the cautioning about the error of imagining Vaikuntha to be like this place. It's not, it's eternal, it's beyond the modes, just as it says, beyond time, beyond the modes of nature. We don't find those things here. So because, then he concludes once again by saying, because our spacecraft can't land there, we conclude, that spacecraft cannot reach these planets does not mean that there are no such planets. For they are described in the revealed scriptures. Gives the example of the rope and the snake, because or the mirage in a desert. So the desert exists and the water exists. The rope exists and the snake exists. But because we mistake one for the other doesn't mean the other doesn't exist. Not good. It's not good logic, and it's not correct. So he's giving rational arguments to accept that which is transcendental by descending the not rational process. It's fascinating. So then the next paragraph he goes directly to Jiva Goswami's commentary from Krama Sandarbha and just lists different references that Jiva Goswami gives, verifying from different scriptural sources, not just Srimad Bhagavatam, the spiritual world exists. Narada Pancharatra, Padma Purana, anyway, different, this scripture, that, Agama Puranas, this scripture, that scripture, it exists. And it's and the same features, it's not material, beyond time, unlimited. And his conclusion is we should simply accept in that way. So now, just read the description, some beginning part of the description. So now I'll read from 11 through 16. The inhabitants of the Vaikuntha planets are described as having glowing, sky bluish complexion. Their eyes resemble lotus flowers, their dress is of yellowish color, and their bodily features very attractive. They are just the age of growing youths. They all have four hands, and they are all nicely dressed, decorated with pearl necklaces, with ornamental medallions, and they appear to be effulgent. Some of them are effulgent like coral and diamonds, in complexion, and have garlands on their heads, blooming like lotus flowers, and some wear earrings. The Vaikuntha planets are also surrounded by various airplanes, all glowing and brilliantly situated. These airplanes belong to the great Mahatmas or devotees of the Lord. The ladies are as beautiful as lightning because of their celestial complexions, and all these combined together appear just like the sky decorated with both clouds and lightning. Prabhupada can't resist talking about airplanes in the spiritual world. They're there. they don't crash. And then, although there is nothing except Brahman, they are of the same quality as Brahman. So one should not mistakenly think that there is only void and no variegatedness in Brahman. Here's scriptural evidence. Thinking like that is due to a poor fund of knowledge. Otherwise, no one would have such a misconception of voidness in Brahman. As there are airplanes and ladies and gentlemen, so there must be cities and houses and everything else just suitable to those particular planets. One should not carry the idea of imperfection from this world to the transcendental world and take it and not take into consideration the nature of the atmosphere as completely free from the influence of time, etc., as described previously. So when we hear airplanes, we don't think of these kind. We hear ladies, and we hear flowers and medallions and jewel decorations and flower garlands and auras of, or radiances that are like coral. And don't make the mistake of thinking it's like here. The goddess of fortune, in her transcendental form, is engaged in the loving service of the Lord's lotus feet, and being moved by the black bees, followers of spring, she is not only engaged in variegated pleasure serving the Lord along with her constant companions, but is always engaged in singing the glories of the Lord's activities. Lord Brahma saw in the Vaikuntha planets the personality of Godhead, who is the Lord of the entire devotee community, the Lord of the goddess of fortune, the Lord of all sacrifices, and the Lord of the universe, and who is served by the foremost servitors like Nanda Sunanda, Prabala, and Arhana, his immediate associates. So, one more verse. The personality of Godhead, seen leaning favorably towards his loving servitors, his very sight intoxicating and attractive, appeared to be very much satisfied. He had a smiling face decorated with enchanting reddish hue. He was dressed in yellow robes and wore earrings and a helmet on his head. He had four hands, and his chest was marked with the lines of the goddess of fortune. So in the purport, Prabhupada is explaining that in the Padma Purana there's a full description of this place that Brahma saw, where the Lord is surrounded by his devotees. So his devotees, there are different, this is going to come up later, but there's four and another set of four. So the first four are religion, knowledge, opulence, and renunciation personified. They're seated by the Lord. And then the four Vedas, they're seated by the Lord, present, ready to advise the Lord. There's 16 energies headed by Chanda, and they're all present. Then there's the gatekeepers. There's different sets of gates, and there's a pair of gatekeepers at each one, and they're by the Lord also, standing by him, and so many other associates. In concluding, the Lord's palace was well decorated and protected by the above mentioned doorkeepers. So this is Brahma seated on his lotus flower, seeing all these things because the Lord disclosed them to him. And the Lord disclosed them to him because he was eligible to have them disclosed. So we're hearing about the same thing, and that hearing is actually the same as what Brahma saw. To be continued. So any discussion or questions?
Manish, you mentioned that when we hear about these things, we should not consider them as material or mythical. Mythical, that is born of speculation, that it may not be like that and just discard it. When we consider it material, what does it mean, Manish, that we are equating it to things here?
Well, the Mayavad philosophy says, brace yourself because this is Mayavad philosophy, that the Krishna and or Vishnu and Vaikuntha and pastimes and so on, this is all material. It's a very rarefied form of goodness beyond which is Brahman. It is also material. Just most subtle, rarefied form of material. Because ultimately everything is one. So we can worship that rarefied material thing, knowing that we have to go beyond that thing to the impersonal, homogeneous blur material. Impersonal conception or material conception that is mythical. And I just should make note, that's offensive. And it's out there. It's what impersonalists will say. This is material. But we can hear it and worship it, but we should know that it's the unborn Brahman that we're really interested in. It's offensive. Very offensive.
Faithful and sincere faithful following of instructions is factual self-control.
Yeah.
And you were just previously mentioning that in trying to apply instructions, what deviates us is sense verification, meaning when our senses are not controlled, we may resolve that yes, I want to apply, but we get deviated by
So this is the which comes first, the chicken or the egg question? Something like that?
Yes. I want to know how is, like, fear from what Srila Prabhupada's statement, it means that by sincerely following the instructions, factually sense control is achieved. So
there, you just answered your question. It's the answer is two-part. It's not all or nothing. It's gradual. But which comes first, part two, is the faithful execution brings factual sense control. And that would say it the other way around, that which is appears to be sense control that's not based on faithful execution, it's illusory. Now you see it, now you don't. Which goes along with this non-deceptive definition. It endures. So, we're in the cultivation stage. Or the clearing stage of chanting the holy name. It's not Namaparad, it's not Shuddhanam, it's Nam Abbas. We're practicing or cultivating Krishna consciousness. So there's the gradual unfolding of including sense control. But it's that comes the byproduct of, or it follows behind faithful execution. And you just add to it, just this is beyond what you asked, but just to add to the response, that follows behind a sincere desire, it's inquisitiveness, or sense of purpose. I want to be situated in that relationship with Krishna. Therefore, when I hear the instruction from Krishna or from representatives of Krishna in disciplic succession, I take it this is Krishna's response to that sincere desire. It's Krishna. The response is Krishna. And I accept it. Then I execute it. And therein lies the key or the secret to successful sense control. Prabhupada uses that specific language. Yeah. In the purport of text 8, following the order of the bona fide spiritual master is the only duty of the disciple, and this completely faithful execution of the orders of the bona fide spiritual master is the secret of success. Just disclosed a secret. Very confidential. Published. Right here. Anything else? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.